Get off my world.
Get off my world.
Get off my world.
Hello, and welcome to a very special episode of Get Off My World. I'm Pat.
I'm Kelvin.
And I'm Joshua.
And this episode, we have a very special guest, the Unaffiliated Critic. Unaffiliated Critic, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Michael. I'm the Unaffiliated Critic. I write about Doctor Who and other shows at unaffiliatedcritic.com, which is really hard to spell, but worth it. I appreciate you guys inviting me to join you this week.
Well, we're happy to have you, Michael. This week is going to be a special discussion of New Who Season 8, the first Peter Capaldi season. And I got to warn you, spoilers aplenty. Lots and lots of spoilers in this episode.
It is a fire hose of spoilers.
Yes, if you have
blasting
not,
you off your chair.
Not seen all of the episodes of this season, you might want to do that first before listening to this. So with that out of the way, we're going to do five rounds rapid about Peter Capaldi's first season. And round one is bright, shiny things.
Ooh.
We're going to talk about all the superficial stuff that's new in the new season. So, Josh, what do you think about the new title sequence?
I really like the new title sequence quite a lot. I like that they moved away from the time vortex. It's in there. But I love all the gears and the clock face. And there's something, I might be stretching, there's something about the gears and the silver, there's something a little colder, there's something in there that kind of matches Capaldi's very practical, unemotional side. And I really like it. Not so much the theme tune, but the titles themselves I think are great.
All right, Kelvin, what do you think about the Doctor's costume?
The Doctor's costume? I largely like it. I keep wanting him to do... Well, okay, the jacket has that red lining, and I keep wanting him to do some kind of flashy
dance
thing where, like, you know, hey, look at the red lining in my jacket, but he never really does. I think I do prefer it more with the white-collared shirt than with the field.
With that ratty sweater that he keeps wearing?
Is it one with the star field?
Yeah, I keep thinking it's like a t-shirt with stars on it.
It kind of looks like something like your kids would give you and you had to wear. You got
it's
it
like,
for Christmas.
Well, Dad's into space here.
Mike, any thoughts on the new TARDIS interior?
I like the interior. I like the books. You know, I like any room with books in it. So that's a new addition this year. I sort of miss the Matt Smith interior. That was my favorite of the new season.
Well, how much is different, though, from it, really? I mean, it's not as anachronistic in the mechanics of the console.
Yeah, which I like. It's not as whimsical. I mean, that one, I will say, the Matt Smith console was a little too, trying too hard to be whimsical.
Well, the first Matt Smith one was super
the
whimsical.
Yeah. Keys and the,
I was kind of fond of that myself, even with the whimsicality, because it did give the sense that the TARDIS constructed itself out of all the random bits and pieces that were lying around the inside.
Yeah.
I need something that looks a little like a keyboard, and so all of a sudden there's that typewriter there. But I see that it might be trying a little too hard.
And here they sort of separated it, so the TARDIS is purely this futuristic machine, and it's the Doctor himself who's layered on the whimsical elements, the books in piles, the chalkboards, the armchairs.
Well, it looks like someone actually lives there now.
Yeah, exactly. It feels like a living space. It reminds me most of Paul McGann's but from the TV movie.
Yeah.
Sylvester McCoy's TARDIS.
It's eighth Doctor era.
Yeah, I like the 19th century feel to it, although I have to say that he has to get the console wiring checked a little bit. If he just bangs on it a bit in the final episode and sparks are flying everywhere.
It's a little steampunky without being, like, cliched. They found a way of being steampunky that doesn't seem tired to me.
Other new stuff. What do we think about the music? I would suggest that it's toned down, and I don't hate Murray Gold's music as much as I normally do this season.
I would have to agree. There are two exceptions. His theme music, as I mentioned, that arrangement, that kind of kazoo opening theme arrangement I really am not fond of. It has no sense of mystery. It's merely kind of alarming. Not in an unsettling, mysterious way. And there was one terrible bit of music in the last episode when the Doctor's falling out of the plane. It was like a fifth grade band trying to do the James Bond theme. It was really bad. But I those are the only moments that really threw me this season.
Yeah, if I'm not noticing the music, then it's being successful, for me at least, because I noticed it a lot in previous seasons, and I almost inevitably hated it. So that's a win in my column. So there are also a lot of new writers and directors this season. Mike, you've written about this a little bit, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Moffat brought in almost a whole new slate of directors this season. He obviously wanted a completely different look for this season, and I think achieved it. I think Douglas McKinnon, who did three episodes, is the only previous director to come back. I may be wrong on that, but for the most part, that's right. Ben Wheatley, who did Deep Breath and Into the Dalek, is new. Paul Wilmhurst, who did Kill the Moon and Mummy, and I think is doing the Christmas special, is new. And then Rachel Talalay, who did the two-part finale. I thought that's the direction was the only thing I liked about the two-part finale, which I'm sure we'll get.
Spoiler.
Yeah, spoiler alert. I think it was a very conscious choice to give the show a whole new look this season.
I think it was pretty successful. I thought it, looked great all the way through. Even in episodes that barely
look
a
is not a problem.
No. Yeah, it looked beautiful all the way through.
You know, that's our takeaway from round one. Look is not a problem.
And now round two, Angry Eyebrows, in which we discuss Peter Capaldi, his performance as the Doctor. So, guys, what do we think of the 12th Doctor, or the 13th Doctor, or the first Doctor, if you count A New Set of Regenerations, whatever he is?
I have mixed feelings, not necessarily because of Capaldi's performance, but because the characterization has seemed fairly diffuse over the course of the season. I'm not totally sure how to articulate that, but it does seem like he's written in bits and pieces, and then he's acting in bits and pieces, and sometimes he's acting in accordance to what's been written, and sometimes he seems to be pushing against it. I find it difficult to complain about Peter Capaldi because I love him in this. I love watching him in Doctor Who, and of course I loved him in The Thick of It, where he was tremendous. But I'm feeling a disjunction between him and the material that has made me uncomfortable so far.
Is there a specific example you have of that, or?
Well, Deep Breath is maybe not the kindest example because it's his very first episode, and the story is written so particularly to show off the different range of possible doctors that he could be: the Dark Doctor, the Manic Doctor, the Doctor who doesn't understand what human beings are like, the Doctor you're supposed to distrust as he abandons Clara, whatever. I think that the whole thing is kind of an attempt to show what the range of this new Doctor could possibly be. But the effect of it doesn't, at least not for me, didn't gel at the end of it, and didn't, I think, gel over the course of the entire season. These little bits and pieces of who the Doctor could possibly be haven't really materialized into a character by the end, if that makes sense.
It does. It's interesting. I rewatched Deep Breath, and I was surprised after going through the entire season, then returning to Deep Breath, how many of his character, at least ticks, we'll call them, are in place. They are jumbled. He's a little disoriented, a little goofier because he's post-regenerative. But his inability to identify different characteristics of people, he confused Clara and the Suntaran because they were vaguely the same height, that's in place. He also has the same lack of detail when he's remembering the past, because we have that mirror thing where he does not remember the previous adventures with the droids. He never places them as people he's encountered before, just like he takes him so long to tweak the Cybermen in the final episode. So there are a lot of things planted there that he does pull forward, and I enjoyed deep breath more on my second viewing and his performance.
I basically agree with Pat that I think he's got an interesting take on the Doctor, but he's just in stories where that Doctor doesn't seem to belong so much.
What story do you think?
Yeah, I don't understand why what this Doctor was doing in Robot of Sherwood.
I don't understand what any of us were doing in Robot.
I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here. I mean, I did not crazy hate Robot of Sherwood like a lot of people I know did, but I just it was more like a fourth Doctor story or a sixth Doctor story or something to me, and not.
It felt more almost like a Matt Smith. A lot of the shtick. Things like fighting with a spoon felt like something goofy and cute that Matt Smith would do and pull off, whereas he looked just like a fish out of water.
It just didn't seem like... He doesn't seem to be the type of Doctor who would be in broadly comic
and
sorts of stories.
Certainly that babyish little argument between him and Robin Hood when they're clapped up together was... You could see maybe Matt Smith pulling that off, but Peter Capaldi, it just seemed like...
He just seemed crabby.
Yeah, it's just not right.
It seemed below him.
So I started my very first review of the season saying that Capaldi wasn't the Doctor for me yet. And I'm at the end of the season, and he's still not the Doctor for me. I love Peter Capaldi. I loved him in The Thick of It. I thought he was great in, Torchwood, Children of Earth. But it feels to me like, and maybe part of it is just the star quality, it feels to me like we're not getting Peter Capaldi as the Doctor, we're getting the Doctor as Peter Capaldi. It just, something about that performance just has not clicked for me with who the Doctor is. And part of it I've written about throughout the season is, he doesn't seem to be having any fun. Very rarely does the Doctor actually seem to be enjoying what he's doing. And for me, I guess that is one of the key elements. If nothing else, the Doctor should look like he's having fun, that he's doing exactly what he wants to be doing. That's part of the problem for me. And the other part of it for me, I think, is he comes off more as an authority figure. And there are other Doctors, I mean, and this is probably controversial, but Pertwee is my least favorite Doctor for that reason. Because he seems like an establishment authority figure, and I like the Doctor to be a trickster, I like him to be an agent of chaos a little bit, subversive, and I'm getting a little of that vibe from Capaldi.
I totally understand where you're coming from, but let me just take a moment to praise Capaldi's performance, because for me, in just a single season, he has become hands down my favorite new series Doctor, and a lot of that has to do with his performance. To me, it's this really intriguing take on the absent-minded professor trope. Usually, I associate that characterization with someone who's all warm and cuddly, but Capaldi creates this dark, angry, absent-minded professor. He's very forgetful and oblivious, but also prickly and dripping with sarcasm. I think it's in this contrast where a lot of the humor comes from, and in my opinion, he is very... very funny. I've laughed more this season than any other than that I can remember. I love how dry and blunt he is. He never overplays a punchline. It's always small and understated, and to me, just very, very Doctor-ish.
I wonder, too, if... I think I'm not going too far by saying that Michael is probably more of a fan of the new series of Doctor Who, the new Who, mm-hmm. and we are... probably, generally speaking, the three of us more fans of the
Which
old
makes
one.
This a very dangerous room for me to be in. I'm
Well, I just wonder if that... I'm not saying that this is the entire method by which we're reacting to the Capaldi Doctor, but it may have something to do with expectations. You talk about you want the Doctor to be enjoying himself more, and I get that, and that's especially the case with David Tennant and Matt Smith recently. But it was not always, and maybe I would say maybe not even frequently the case with Doctors from the classic series. Were they always...
Oh, sure it was. I mean, with the exception possibly of, Colin Baker, obviously, for a lot of his run.
Peter Davison never had any fun.
Who was a grumpy man. But even Hartnell seemed to get really excited about his scientific experiments and his explorations sometimes.
Well, early Tom Baker, though, too. I mean, he had to be the doctor who told people to shut up the most in the first half of his run. We tend to remember the goofy second half of Tom Baker. So at least half of Tom Baker falls, I think, in this short-tempered camp of doctors.
Well, I think we're getting into the weeds of it's difficult to generalize about the character of the doctor as a whole, because there's so many individual little parts of it. Is the doctor a character who has fun a lot? I might disagree with that, but Michael would make that claim, and I think there's a lot of validity to it.
Oh, I don't know if I want to bring this up just yet, but
go right ahead.
Every time the doctor regenerates, he's a completely new person. He has a completely new brain, and I hope no one finds this insensitive or whatever, but this time around, he's regenerated with space Asperger's.
Space Asperger's.
I think
he kind of can't get emotions anymore.
I find that really appealing.
Which is kind of interesting, but it's also kind of like, geez, you're 2,000 years old. I mean, wouldn't you think you'd have learned how to deal with humans by now?
I mean, I agree with you on that, and I'm misanthropic myself, so the misanthropy I have no problem with. It's very refreshing, in fact, after Smith, and particularly David Tennant with his, oh my God, I love every single person I have ever met. You know, I find that's great. I love that about Capaldi. And I like the forgetfulness thing. I mean, for one thing, this doctor is literally 1,000 years older than the previous doctors.
Yeah.
Right? So stuff like when he like forgets about Madame de Pompadour, that's great. It's like, that was a really long time ago for him at this point. So I have no trouble with that. I think I don't know what it is. I think it's a little too one note for me. And I don't know why he's doing what he's doing. The doctor at this point. I don't know what he's getting out of this, because they've removed a little bit of that sense of fun, that sense of joy, that sense of I'm just doing this because it's, you know, because it's fun. And they've removed a little bit of the heroism, which I think we're going to talk about a little later.
And I do find that interesting. It seems odd to me they take the whole 50th anniversary special to rewrite the destruction of Gallifrey. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like at that time they were going to take some of this darkness off of him. And let him be a new doctor. But then they come back with season 8 and are obsessed with how dark he is.
So I don't disagree with anything that Michael just said. I think I'm falling on the, I still have a glow about Peter Capaldi that I'm appreciating. But I want to return to the two points that Mike just made, where he doesn't think that the doctor is having any fun and that he's less of a hero this season, both of which I think are absolutely true, mm-hmm. and both of which I think are related to other elements that we'll be talking about later in this podcast.
Yeah.
On the fun side, I would suggest that part of that is because he's not surrounded by enough people to play off. He's almost entirely reactive to Clara over the course of this season. And I would never, I don't believe I'm even saying this, but I kind of miss the big family structure that was in the TARDIS for the last couple of seasons, where there's Rose and her family and there's Amy and Rory and all this kind of stuff. It gave a more ensemble feel that is now gone and is reliant only on Clara and to a lesser degree on Danny, who isn't really a part of it.
No,
and
no.
That gives the fun element of who the Doctor can react to, it's much more one note. And then the heroism thing, the last thing I'll say about this, ties into the fact that he doesn't really do much over the course of the entire season. And when he does do things, it's kind of disguised or his motivations for it are unclear. And by the time we get to the final episode, he's almost completely impotent and does almost nothing. And that doesn't serve the character of the Doctor well at all.
No, I think that those were his worst episodes for his character, those last two.
I agree with both of you. Josh's point about the darkness that is carried over into this season, this is my big problem with the season thematically, and we can talk about that a little further on. But Pat, your point about Clara and his reaction to Clara, I have started to love Clara this season, and I didn't at all last season. I think she's really blossomed. I think Jenna Coleman has been tremendous this season. I do think she's the wrong companion for this doctor.
That's totally. That's really my big
this
thing.
This doctor does not need a control freak. This doctor needs someone who's going to push him in the other direction. He needs an ace. He needs someone that he has to control who's a little younger and a little more chaotic.
Yeah, personally, I would rather see him with a gaggle of school children as he was mm-hmm. in the Dumb Forest episode.
I guess what I take away from this whole segment is we should bring back Ace.
So we're beginning round three, which is our big ideas segment, in which we're going to talk about some of the themes that have been recurring throughout this season. I actually just finished my review of the last episode yesterday, I think. So I haven't had a chance to read a lot of reviews and other people's reviews. But I've seen a couple of times on Twitter and various places, people refer to this as one of the most thematically tight seasons of New Who, and I disagree with that. Mm. To me, we ended up in a very messy place thematically. There were a lot of ideas thrown out throughout the season that were sort of half-developed or developed very confusingly. So I think we can talk about that a little bit. For me, my big thing is we have... To me, there was a clear plan. Moffat had a very clear plan through the first three seasons of his tenure, which I've have jokingly referred to as the Moffat Master Plan. That I'm not seeing that kind of cohesion anymore. It culminated in Day of the Doctor, and to me, where we've gone from Day of the Doctor has not made a lot of sense to me. Curious to hear what the rest of you think about this.
So, I've read your reviews, but they've remind us what you think the big arc of Moffat's Master Plan was.
Well, I mean, I think it had a lot of components. Part of it, and I think you guys have talked about this a little bit. Part of it was simply dismantling some of what RTD had done, and doing it in a very respectful way. Moffat could have come in and just changed the show out of the box, and he didn't do that. Instead, he came in. And he came up with some very elaborate arcs to sort of scale the Doctor back from what he had become under RTD, which was, this superpowered, intergalactically famous figure who could scare people with just the mention of his name. Everybody knew who he was. He could do just about anything. He was sort of infallible. And so Moffat had this 3-year plan to sort of scale that back. And so we ended up... by the end of that, the end of the Matt Smith tenure, we end up with him being, less famous. He's been deleted from every database in the universe. He's been, nobody knows, even the Daleks don't know who he is anymore. So scaling that back. But also, Moffat dealt a lot with this question of who is the Doctor? Is he, is he a warrior? Is he this messiah figure that he often was under the RTD era. We have the piece in A Good Man Goes to War where Riversong says the very word doctor has now come to mean mighty warrior in some cultures. So we have this sort of dual nature of the Doctor that I think Moffat was dealing with throughout that era. And I think he did it, and I think he brought that arc to a satisfactory completion in Day of the Doctor by literally removing the key element of New Who, the characterization of the Doctor in the New Who, which is his destruction of Gallifrey, right? He didn't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. He didn't blow up. He's not the blood-soaked, monster that the universe thought he was under RTD. So, to me, we should have gone into season 8 with kind of a clean slate, with Moffat having rolled the Doctor back to sort of what he was in the classic series a little more. Moffat should have listened to his favorite quote from Marcus Aurelius that we heard in Day of the Doctor, waste no more time asking what a good man should be, just be that. That's what I thought we were going to get in season 8.
I agree. Instead, we
have him come in, and suddenly he's asking, am I a good man again? And it's like, we've already done that. We've already, completed that arc. Let's take us in a new direction.
It's interesting because the only narrative hint for why this is happening again is in the first episode, Deep Breath, at the very end when Clara comes into the TARDIS and he says, I'm the Doctor, I've lived for 2,000 years, I've made a lot of mistakes. it's time to change that. And there seems to be this hint that, you know, this is a new set of regenerations. Like, he's really looking back. I don't know how much of a near-death experience he had before this new set of regenerations. It seemed that's the only suggestion of why. I don't think it's a very strong one, or like you're saying, a very good reason to go back and have this very pensive, dark quality. But that's the only narrative reason I can find for it. But it is ultimately unsatisfying, because I think to bookend this, in the last episode, the big revelation after all this talk of, am I a good man, am I a soldier, am I an officer, we get his sudden revelation, accompanied by flashbacks, that he is none of these things. He's an idiot with a box and a screwdriver. And it's not very cathartic, because like you said, we already knew that some of us, a long time ago. But if you watch the new series, like you said, you got there at the Day of the Doctor. And so it seems like he just extended that whole thing one season, and he's now putting, we'll see where he goes, but it seems like he's putting him there again at the end of this season.
And, I mean, this is one of my beefs with Moffat, is that it seems like he doesn't know when he's actually done. He doesn't know when he's actually completed the story he wants to tell. He did it with Amy and Rory, right? We get, in season six, we get through the God Complex. Everybody agrees it's time for them to leave the TARDIS. They all say goodbye. It's very touching. And then he brings them back for six more episodes.
And we have a recurrence of that with Clara this season, who can't quite figure out when she's done with the Doctor either.
Right.
But yeah,
right.
It's reflected on a larger narrative level. And I think you're right that everything kind of wrapped up in Day of the Doctor and then had its nice little coda with the Christmas special where Matt Smith regenerated there. And that could have been an introduction to a Doctor who was 1,000 years older, who was who had spent 1,000 years on the Christmas planet, or however long it was. But this doesn't feel like that. This feels like a hard reset where he needs to address those questions again, not like he spent 1,000 years on the planet figuring out who he was.
Right. This should have been the first... This should have been the first Doctor of the modern era who was free of all the guilt of the Time War, right? Who wasn't carrying that big burden of darkness. And instead, he comes in and he hits that note right out of the box, and I don't really understand it. It wasn't satisfactory how it played out throughout the season.
It's not satisfactory either his relationship to Clara, who starts Deep Breath by questioning, do I even know who this person is anymore, where... Of all of the companions, she should have been the one to acknowledge this, having known all of them and all of their incarnations for how many hundreds of years? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so even on a practical narratological level, it's very scrambled.
Well, yeah. That was Moffat making Clara stand in for all the fans he was afraid he was going to lose.
Of course.
By casting an older, less attractive Doctor.
Yeah, it's very didactic, it's very on the nail, and it was probably not necessary.
No, it's funny because he was so smart with Matt Smith's first episode, because David Tennant was immensely popular, and he just basically started like Tennant had never existed. He didn't do a nod to him. It was like Matt Smith got shot out of a cannon, and I think it was one of the strongest first episodes of any Doctor. Because you were just on board with him right away. And to take so much time to stop and apologize, kind of, it felt like he was apologizing for casting Peter Capaldi, was not a great start. And you can't blame Peter Capaldi for it, but it felt very tentative and apologetic to me.
So I think we've touched on a couple of different elements of this. We don't know that Peter Capaldi is... we don't really know who the Doctor who Peter Capaldi is playing is, and we don't know what relationship it has to the Moffat master plan about deconstructing and reconstructing the Doctor. But what is it about this season? Is there anything about this season that is constructing a new Doctor? Because they certainly talk about it a lot. They talk about, is he a good man? And they talk about defining him as... an officer. Danny calls him an officer in opposition to all of the soldier talk that the Doctor is doing this season, and he talks about that a lot. So are these fruitful at all for what the season is going for with who the Doctor is?
Well, for me, the soldier thing I found very confusing. I think it goes back to what you're saying about Clara should have been the one to recognize the regeneration process. It seems weird to me, too, that this doctor would suddenly hate soldiers. A doctor who has had disagreements with soldiers, but has always been friends with soldiers. The Brigadier is his greatest friend, and it just seemed a little ham-fisted the way it was introduced. He just woke up hating soldiers, and it was awkward.
I, of course, totally agree, and I was thinking about this a lot today, because it's weird that Capaldi's doctor is so vocal about hating soldiers, because what he really has been objecting to as the doctor in previous incarnations is officers. Yeah, he mm-hmm. objects to what he calls a military mindset, which is the idea of using violence as a first resort, an inflexible mode of approach, a kind of non-subtle way of doing things. But those are all objections on how people make decisions, not the fact that they are a soldier who has chosen to follow orders. That's a new and kind of disturbing trend in this doctor, to object to the fact that you personally are a soldier and that somehow makes you inferior. Because a soldier kind of by definition doesn't make the decisions, right? It's the officers who make the decisions, as Danny claims during the season. And that's really what his objections have been to the Brigadier and various other military types over the course of his career. So why the soldier? It's weird. Yeah. It's punching down, right?
It really is. In many ways, this discussion is making me think that Stephen Moffat's doing it out of order, but really what he wants to do is he used Matt Smith to essentially rewrite how he would have done David Tennant. There's also a way of looking at this where Peter Capaldi is a rewrite of how he would have done Christopher Eccleston. Because you could see some of this anger and his, you know, projecting hostility towards soldiers because he was the one who had to make the decision about destroying Gallifrey. You could see all this in a sort of immediately post-Time War scarred doctor, maybe.
Yes.
But here it just seems out of the blue.
Right. It's completely out of place for the doctor who just went through the thing with the war doctor where he, you know, where that was no longer such a big burden of guilt for him. It's exactly the opposite of where it seemed like we ended up thematically at the end of Matt Smith's run.
I guess it's just that the tendency in any kind of modern franchise thing to try and just overstuff it with every conceivable thing.
And you think that's a characteristic of this season?
Kind of. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, Spider-Man can't fight one villain. He has to fight three. He can't have one girlfriend. He has to have two.
Reasonable.
And trying to figure out which one he actually wants more. Or, you know, something like that. And it's just, I don't know, I think a lot of this, you know, the characterization stuff just gets kind of messed up because they're trying to shove everything into, like, one episode.
So do you think that
there's no time for anything to really kind of be explored, really? I mean, it's
narrative and thematic stuff, where they just have too many ideas in any particular one episode?
Yeah, it's this sort of fear of, oh, God, someone might be bored or so.
I think New Who, and we could talk about this too, has always been at odds with whether it wanted to be serialized narrative or if it wants to be a story of the week. And it has never been comfortable with either one. Moffat wants to make it more serialized, but then he seems to backtrack on that. And so I think some of these themes suffer from that because it's not a continual narrative. But the themes suggest it is, but it gets rebooted, and then you get weird things like Robot of Sherwood that doesn't match anything, and then it goes back to something like Listen. I mean, those two back-to-back is just like a whiplash.
I agree. It's hard to conceive of another show that could have Robot of Sherwood followed by Listen and still be in any sense the same show.
Well,
not to like it kind of for it, even though I did not enjoy the experience of going from one episode to the other.
Well, a lot of something I've been thinking of recently has just been a lot of what kind of keeps me watching Doctor Who is that it is just a ridiculously inconsistent show, and it's always been that way. I mean, Caves of Androzani was followed up with The Twin Dilemma.
True.
That is massive whiplash in quality. I mean, and and you know, it's not like it's some new thing that just happened in Doctor Who. I mean, it's always been.
Yeah, like, there's 50 years of precedent.
Like, you might have a really good story, and then there's, like, some really terrible... You know, the old days, it might have been more, like, good story, really terrible effects and costumes or something.
There was a kind of get-out-of-jail-free card with that old inconsistency, right? Where you didn't expect it to be the same in narrative or quality from week to week, but now as people like RTD and Moffat are throwing story arcs over everything, then you kind of expect a little bit more continuity, or I don't know, maybe you don't anymore.
Yeah. Part of the reason that I as many flaws as I find in this season, I feel a little more engaged, me personally, than I have been for a while in Doctor Who, and I don't know what it is. There's something very engaging in this season.
Yeah,
and I can't quite put my finger on it as I sit here, and I do criticize it a lot. But each week I couldn't wait for the next episode, whereas I didn't feel it, particularly with the last Matt Smith season, up until the Day of Doctor, which I loved to death.
Okay. Sorry, if I could chime in here. This is Tony,
what?
The sound guy.
What?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, the
who
guy
is that
at
person?
At the soundboard, the power of the power. Anyway, this is actually what you guys have been talking about has kind of been running through my head because, like Michael, I'm not a big fan of this season either, but I've been trying to kind of construct this idea of what they've been trying to do with the season to explain why they did the things that I didn't like. And I think I really like the point that Josh hit about this being a rewrite of Christopher Eccleston, because it kind of makes sense if you look at it that way. I've almost been watching this episode thinking, is this some attempt to do like a post-traumatic stress disorder doctor? And the reason that that makes sense now after Gallifrey has been brought back, because the previous three doctors have had this stuff all clamped down inside of them, like it was too traumatic to think about because he was the blood-soaked doctor who destroyed Gallifrey. But now that it's back, it's this band-aid that's been ripped off, and he's now having to deal with all of this stuff. And that would kind of go in a ways of explaining his hostility towards the soldiers, but then coming around at the end and saluting the brigadier and having some respect for Danny and all of the things that he should have, or that Moffat, if he had been writing for Eccleston, would have done that first season. But it kind of makes sense to do it now with the fact of Gallifrey not being gone anymore. He doesn't have to clamp it down, and he's dealing with it.
Well, we have two, I think, bits of narrative evidence for Tony's headcanon. And I think I did mention the line at the end of Deep Breath where he says, you know, I made a lot of mistakes, it's time to change that. That seems to, again, hint that this is something he's dealing with the past. We also have in Deep Breath where the Silurian lady, Madame Bastra, says something about veils and compares her veil to the faces that the doctor wears and pretty much explicitly says, and I'm assuming this is Moffat's voice, that Matt Smith, his face was a veil that the doctor wore, and that there's a sense in what she's saying that this is a truer, a revealed doctor. All of that would kind of support Tony's interpretation, if you're going to listen to some crazy sound guy.
Tony's ideas are very interesting. I think it's a good theory, and I think it's giving Moffat a lot of credit. I tend to think this season has just been messy, so that's where I run into problems with some of this.
Right.
But one thing I will add to what he said, it's another lens through which to look at this, is this is a doctor who has faced his mortality for the first time in the entire Doctor Who season, right? Mm-hmm. At the end of Time of the Doctor, he thought he was dying. He was out of regenerations. He thought he was done.
Yep.
So that is another moment in a man's life when he could be, that could account for some of this post-traumatic stress, the psychological thing that Tony's talking about as well.
Yes, he finally benefited from a deus ex machina instead of being the deus ex machina.
And there is other, I think, in the books they've suggested this, and in other Doctor Who mediums, that there's a limit on regeneration for a reason. they decided on the 13 lives because beyond that, it tended to cause some deterioration to the Time Lord mind.
And I'm sure we'll be talking about the novels and in particular alien bodies at some point in the future.
But there's, you know, you can think whatever crazy thing you want to and find some support somewhere in the Doctor Who universe for it.
Well, you guys, I think we've gone into a lot of depth and a lot of interiority about the Doctor this season.
Plus, we got to say interiority.
Yeah, that doesn't come up much, interiority.
Not outside, anyway.
No. But well, the interiority is bigger than the outside.
I think I have interiority.
There we go. Okay, thanks, guys. Let's move into round four, the Death Zone. And this is the time in which we are going to discuss what is the best episode of Season 8 and what is the worst episode of Season 8. This is probably going to be maybe the most heated segment, I'm going to guess.
Well, I think the best episode of this season is Mummy on the Orient Express.
Ooh.
Oh, God. Mm.
And I think the worst is In the Forest of the Night.
Okay. Mm. Joshua, how about you?
I'd have to say my favorite is Listen.
Okay.
Least favorite? It's a toss-up. It's a toss-up between what I think is a worse script on the page and what I like the least personally. I would have to agree on the page. The most problematic script is In the Forest of the Board, or whatever it is.
The night, yes.
What I liked least was Robot and Sherwood. So I think I'll say Robot of Sherwood just to add more controversy.
Sure. Okay. Michael?
I'm split on both ends, too. I adore Listen, but I think as a pure episode of Doctor Who, my favorite episode is Flatline.
Yeah.
Mm, good.
I think the most painful episode for me to watch was probably Robot of Sherwood. But the episode I think is worse, and I don't think it could be worse if it had ended with Peter Capaldi running through the streets carrying the Olympic torch, is Death in Heaven.
Oh, you're right. It's pretty bad.
Well, Kelvin, what about you?
Well, I think my favorite is probably Flatline. I would probably go with Flatline as well. My least favorite, and I'm kind of amazed I'm going to say this, it's Kill the Moon.
Ooh, okay.
I could not get on board with that ending to save my soul.
Well, I think this is a good place to start.
Why don't you elaborate on that?
We've got a lot of disagreement here.
Well, okay. The moon is actually a giant egg for some giant space thing. Okay. All right.
Like you read about.
It hatches. The fragments of the moon apparently just vanish.
It instantaneously lays an egg.
That is as big as it is. Bigger, in fact. And in fact has all the details of the actual moon exactly the same. Nothing is impacted on Earth whatsoever. I mean, the tides don't freak out. I just like, what in the hell just happened?
But it had a lot of heart.
I don't understand what part of that you have a problem with,
Kevin. I mean, okay, Doctor Who has always maybe edged a little more towards science fantasy than science fiction. But I think elements in this series, in this season that kind of most bugged me is that it is going way too much into the fantasy end of the pool. I mean, In the Forest of the Night was also, I think, too fantasy-ish.
Okay.
For what Doctor Who should be.
Let's hear what Pat thinks about In the Forest of the Night.
Well, I thought it was a mess. I've blotted most of it out, I think. So right from the beginning where, you know, the only William Blake poem that anyone knows and reads in high school is The Tiger, and so as soon as you see something with that title, you know, there's going to be a tiger in it somewhere for no particular reason.
I just have to say that I think it says a lot about the two of you that right away One person objects based on science, and the other objects based on poetry. I love it.
That's kind of it, yeah.
But please continue, Pat.
You know, I'm going to immediately walk some of this back because I said earlier that I would have preferred to have seen Peter Capaldi with a gaggle of schoolchildren than Clara, and this is the episode that I'm thinking of because what I liked about this episode was exactly that, where mm-hmm. I thought his sort of exasperated alien schoolteacher personality worked really well with here. But it was not enough to overcome the just the nonsense of it. I don't know what happened in the Forest of the Night, really. Apparently, there were trees that produced more oxygen to prevent a solar flare from... Now I'm getting into where Kelvin was with Kill the Moon.
It's like some like Earth's biosphere has always had this secret hidden defense mechanism.
Of trees?
Of plant life creating a burn-off shield of excess oxygen or something, and I'm like,
so you know what it reminded me of. So right. First it's exactly this. It makes no sense logically. It's poetically preposterous. Mm-hmm. And it has all of these things like the little girl who makes things happen with her brain out of trauma that never is developed or goes anywhere.
No.
But more than anything else, it reminded me of, no one remembers this, that X-Files episode in like season 300 or whatever it was, where they finally resolve what happened to Mulder's sister.
Oh, yes.
And it turned out that she had, like, she was dead, but she had a walk-in from fairies or something, and this is a new age belief that if you're going to die in some traumatic way, that fairies walk into your body and take that pain upon them, and then that discharges that in some metaphysical way that prevents suffering from happening.
And then they lay a giant egg.
And
the size of the moon.
Which is the moon. This felt to me like that. Mm-hmm. It felt like the worst sort of nonsensical New Age belief that that is related to the idea that the Earth will protect itself for the benefit of humankind or for life, and that is somehow a natural process. I'm giving it probably too much credit than it deserves, because I don't think it actually
the intent, but I think, apart from everything else, it's a horrible message.
Yes, exactly.
Really, as far as, like, I kept hearing that referred to as, like, an ecological message, it's a horrible ecological message. The Earth will fix itself.
Do what you want. Yeah. The plants will protect us.
And
the moon will lay an egg. It's all good.
Okay, what exactly happened to Maeve's sister anyway? It's like
she'd been hiding in that bush.
My sister's vanished, and then suddenly this bush dissolves, and oh, there's our sister. Yeah, end.
It was a walk-in. The trees had her. That was
okay.
I didn't even
desperate understand attempt it. To give it a fairy tale ending when the whole thing was just really badly constructed.
There's been a lot of very fairy tale-ish elements.
So
I think,
the only way I will accept it,
I don't know about,
is if I can assume that the Swamp Thing did it.
The Swamp Thing was involved.
He saved
the world.
It's
totally the Swamp Thing.
All right,
Alan Moore's Swamp Thing. Yeah,
so that was my worst. That was Kelvin's worst. Mike, you want to talk about your worst?
I really
worst?
Don't want to talk about Death in Heaven.
Let's do it.
I just wrote 5,000 words this week on Death in Heaven, and I don't know if I can talk about it anymore.
Well, whose fault is that?
Save it for
Death
the coda?
Heaven, the big crime of it is how badly it botched all of these themes that had been laid out throughout the season. I mean, it just totally dropped the ball on all of them. But leaving that aside, what nobody seems to be talking about is what actually happens in this story. Okay, Doctor Who has now said that the entire concept of an afterlife is based on this bullshit plan of the Masters to give the Doctor a birthday present. Every human being who ever lived on the Earth got uploaded to a magic disco ball and stored there so they could be downloaded into magically generating Cyberman bodies to give the Doctor an army that he never wanted.
Well, now when you put it that way, it now became my favorite episode.
What happens when we die has been answered, and this is the answer. And it wasn't a con, and it wasn't retconned at the end of the episode, which at least RTD knew to do. Like, I mean, the end of The Last of the Time Lords, he at least knew to retcon the most ridiculous stuff that had happened out of continuity. No, this is what happened. It's ridiculous on a huge scale.
Well, aside from that, it just has so many different emotional sledgehammers.
Yeah.
And a lot of other, which you two are pointing at with the fantasy elements that there's no explanation for. Not, I don't need hard science, but the whole thing with the Master's magic bracelet that can bring one person back from the dead. And
from where?
From where? They don't have a body anymore.
Still on the disco ball, and this is the only one that gets to come back?
And how did the little boy's body magically generate itself? Mm-hmm. How is Claire going to care for him? He's been dead for years. He doesn't speak English. His parents would be freaked out if they saw him again.
Yeah, there's
there's not a single thing about any of it that makes sense.
There are one or two, I think, nice moments. That's the most I can say about it.
I think I liked it a lot more than anyone else here. But the thing for it, in it for me that kind of bugged me is that. The Clara and Danny relationship up to this point, which I actually kind of liked because it seemed like a lot of awkward people kind of just starting to know each other.
Sure.
I mean, it seemed kind of like a fairly realistic romantic kind of relationship.
Especially from a bunch of Doctor Who fans watching.
Yeah. What do we know about romantic relationships? Not a damn thing. But anyway, and then all of a sudden, Danny and Clara are, like, the two most in love with each other people in the history of the Earth. And, like, where did this suddenly come from? And Clara makes the gigantic declarations of, you know, I love you. I can never possibly love anyone else. I am willing to, like, destroy the Doctor's link to the TARDIS just for Danny. And I'm like, wait a minute, where the hell did this come from all of a sudden?
Well, I think
despite the fact that she's been lying to him and he's a condescending ass, I mean, the relationship never really works.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
Let's put a pin in that.
I know, it's all, whole other
save it for round five.
I know.
But, yes, I personally liked, and here we're talking about Dark Water and not Death in Heaven, I liked the scene with Clara and the volcano. I thought that worked out pretty well. But it would have been more effective if it was, say, Amy or Rory and the Doctor there, because they had established that sort of relationship, and that betrayal of trust would have mattered a lot more.
Yes.
But let's quick move on. Josh, dismiss Robot of Sherwood in a few words.
It was crap.
All right.
Here, here.
Well, here's the deal. I'm going to dismiss this a little more while big upping another episode that I didn't choose as my favorite, because I don't think it quite deserves that.
Yeah.
But the problem with
big up it, Josh,
is it does that terrible thing that a lot of series do where they suddenly turn all their characters into sitcom characters for one episode to get laughs. Mm. And there are some laughs, there's some cheap jokes, but no one behaves in character in Robot of Sherwood. Robin Hood doesn't, from based on all accounts and books. The Doctor does not behave as they have portrayed him for the previous two episodes. Clara's kind of goofy. Whereas something like The Caretaker, which was a very comic episode that I actually really enjoyed, the comedy was all based in story and in character development. And so the laughs came from a truer place.
Yeah, one comment a friend of mine made about Robot of Sherwood, and this kind of made me go like, oh, yeah. What should have happened is that Clara always wanted to be Robin Hood, not be Robin Hood's girlfriend.
Would have stepped that on the flat line a little.
That would have been a dramatically different
shoot higher,
take
yeah.
on the thing. It came at such a weird point, and it's the third 12th Doctor story. That's way too early. That frivolous.
Welcome to the future if Mark Gatiss takes over this show.
It's truly frightening, I think.
This is the dread I live with.
That is the darkest timeline, Michael.
It really is. And it seems the most likely timeline at this point.
Yes, it does.
We can't talk about that. I literally can't talk about that.
All right, let's avert our eyes from that timeline and talk about the best episodes from this season.
I would argue, listen, I'll jump right on there. I just rewatched it today. Part of the reason I like it is because it is Moffat, recycling Moffat, which should be a strike against it. But I feel he subverts himself in a way that is very interesting. Monsters that are somewhere in the normal world, but yet he subverts it by possibly they're not even there. It's Moffat trolling fans, which is another one of his favorite things to do, by putting Clara into the Doctor's timeline really early on. But I just think it's really well-structured. It has really witty dialogue, great scenes. It's the episode where I really felt like I understood the 12th Doctor. So that's my very tasty brief.
I agree with all of that. I think Listen as a piece of art is the best hour of Doctor Who that we got this year, hands down. I didn't pick it as my favorite because I think, like Blink, everybody's favorite episode, Blink, it doesn't really feel like a Doctor Who episode. It's something different. But no, I think it's a gorgeous hour of television.
I don't disagree with any of that, but it didn't move me emotionally in any particular way, which isn't, it's all on me, it's not on the episode, whatever. So for me, the episode that felt the most satisfactorily Doctor Who this season is The Mummy on the Orient Express. I actually like that one. I wouldn't have expected this, and this is not going to be a popular choice, and that's okay. But what I liked about it is that it was a fairly well-structured episode in terms of developing suspense. And even if at the end you kind of don't know what the heck that was about, I liked that it ended with what is currently my favorite moment of the Peter Capaldi Doctor, which is the moment where Clara wakes up on the beach and there's this, well, what happened to the others? I dropped them off wherever I dropped them off. Really? No, I left them all to die, and I saved only you. And then they have this moment where they really talk frankly to each other about, well, you were so cold to when this person was dying. Well, yes, I was, but if I couldn't save that person, I was going to move on, and I was going to save the next person. And if I couldn't save that person, then I was going to move on and save the next person. This, to me, felt more like Pyramids of Mars than anything else I've seen in the last few years. Maybe you might see me as cold-blooded, but I have to do these things in this particular way or more people are going to die.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the 12th Doctor is to me. He kind of doesn't have time for the emotional side of things anymore.
There's another great bit in there. I just love, it's a small detail, I love that he's just sketching stuff out in the sand. And I think it goes back to Kelvin's comment about the Asperger's syndrome, he's the Doctor.
Yeah.
With the chalkboards and everything else that he can't, the wheels are turning so much for him and for this Doctor all the time. And then he is calculating the odds and he's playing the game all the time. And I find that really intriguing. And I think for me, Mummy and the Orient Express suffered a little by placement, because I think it makes the point about the 12th Doctor and the way he's looking at scenarios of whose life to save when. Does a good job with that, but it comes a little late, and the point had been hit a lot earlier, even though I think it might make it better than in earlier episodes.
But both Kelvin and Mike picked Flatline as their best episode this season. So, do you guys want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, I mean, for me, Flatline was just hitting on all cylinders. It really was. It worked thematically. The story was interesting. I mean, I like Mummy, but for me, it's a solid middle-of-the-road episode. And part of what it suffers from is just repetition and setting. I mean, we have, you know, three or four scenes of the Mummy in the middle of the train coming down the thing. Flatline had a lot of motion to it. It was moving. It had a lot of different characters. It felt like it was constantly in motion. I thought it brought Clara's story to a very satisfactory arc after Kill the Moon and Mummy, where she, you know, starts to understand about what it means to actually do what the Doctor does. And it comes back to what you said, Pat, about, you know, that conversation they have at the end of Mummy. He says to her at the end of Flatline, you know, you were an excellent Doctor and goodness had nothing to do with it. Right, it's not about being good. It's about, you know, making the right decisions and doing what you have to do. I thought it was a tremendous episode. I thought it was original. Felder?
Yeah, I basically liked it. I thought you had cool, scary aliens. I mean, if I can put it in 12-year-old boy terms, it had cool, scary aliens.
It's cool, though.
You know, it had that. It had... I liked the relationship Clara had with the graffiti artist guy.
It had a lot of great small moments. It had a lot of great comedy in it, again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, coming out of the real situation, coming out of the narrative they set up, I think the doctor handing things to Clara from her purse is it's gold because they earned it. It's visually
the
funny,
stuff
but
the tiny
narrative
TARDIS
earned
was
it.
Great. I really, I love the tiny TARDIS.
If you can be funny and scary and hit the character stuff all in one episode, that's all I ask.
It is.
Yeah.
It does have the, like, arguably, though, I think one of the worst lines in this season. And I like to imagine Peter Capaldi questioning this line when he has to jump out of the TARDIS and point his sonic screwdriver and yell, "I name you the Boneless."
Yeah.
It's not enough to detract the entire episode. It's a great episode.
I wouldn't have called
him
the Boneless.
You the Boneless.
I would have called him the Flatlanders.
Yeah,
but,
Flatlanders. Yeah. Anything. I don't know. But I want that to become an insult that we use as Doctor Who fans. I name you the Boneless.
You can see Capaldi rebelling against lines sometimes.
Yeah. You can.
I felt like he did that in Mummy when he had to say, "Are you my mummy?" He could not have said that line more quietly. It's like he didn't even want to say it. It was such an obvious joke to make.
There is a sense in all new Who that these things are picked up for alternate media purposes, right? They're going to show up on YouTube, or they're going to be shown. So things like "Are You My Mummy," which are intended to be retweeted, somebody like Peter Capaldi could just try to deliver as quietly as possible so it won't get it. So, all right, that's our Death Zone. All right, so we're going into our fifth and final round of our Capaldi-sode, which is the future. So what do we expect from the Doctor now in Season 9, in the Christmas special, and going forward? I'd like to start this by dialing back everything I said earlier in this episode. Well, okay, not everything. But I feel that I expressed more criticism of Peter Capaldi than I really meant.
Mm-hmm.
All of the criticism of his performance that we talked about in episode 2 and what his writing was like and whatever, I don't disagree with any of it. But emotionally, I feel that I should say that I love it, that mm-hmm. I like Peter Capaldi a lot. I've liked him before he was the Doctor, and I've liked his performance, broadly speaking, this season. I'm very excited to see where he goes after this. Much more excited than I was for David Tennant or Matt Smith, for example. And that's where I hope to see things in the future. I really want to see more of Peter Capaldi. I want to see him expand into the role of the Doctor. I want to see him have scripts deserving of his performance of the Doctor.
I agree with you totally. One of the things I really like about him is that he does not have the same level of moral authority that the other new series doctors have had. In this season, we've seen him be questioned in a way that reminds me of the old series doctors. When they get too pompous, when they get too sharp, when they get too full of themselves, people take the wind out of them and they have to kind of back down a little. And to me, that's what I always liked about the Doctor, that he behaved a little childishly, that he was your hero, but you didn't always want to spend tons of time with him. And I think there are tons of old series Doctors that are like that. And so I appreciate that. I appreciate the fact that we have regeneration back in the show, how it was in the old series, in that it could be anything. This is, to me, the first drastic regenerative change of the new series. And I really appreciate that. It excites me about not only the next season of Capaldi, but what comes after him. I feel like Moffat has primed the audience for the idea that we don't have to see different takes on the same character over and over again.
So Dr. 13, Mark Gatiss, right?
No.
I'd rather see him as the Doctor than the showrunner.
So. Yeah, he'd be an okay Doctor, I would think. I guess it depends on like what's going to happen with the Christmas episode, which has not aired. I have a feeling it's going to be a really gooey fairy tale happy ending thing for Clara. Where, like, I bet it's going to be like Clara joins up with Danny in heaven or some damn thing like that.
I don't have the greatest feeling about the Christmas special, no.
although I really want to see Nick Frost in it, though. Because I like Nick Frost
as
a lot.
As Santa Claus? Okay.
Well, yeah. As we mentioned, we enjoyed Listen, and there is still that Orson Pink is hanging out there. I do think we're looking at a retcon of the season finale in the Christmas special.
Yeah, because, Orson Pink has to happen.
Yeah, I don't mind a certain amount of retcon. I just hope it isn't that Father Christmas just magically brings Clara together with Danny.
Well, it depends on who Santa Claus is.
Yes,
because I don't really know, but I think maybe it's not actually Santa Claus.
You think it's probably Rassilon, right?
It's probably Rassilon.
It's got to be
Rassilon regenerated as a fat bearded guy,
or the Ronnie. It's got to be the Ronnie.
It's the Ronnie. Yes.
It is totally the Ronnie.
What do you think, Mike? What are your thoughts?
Well, on the Christmas special, Moffat has actually been very good about making the Christmas specials actually about Christmas, which is something RTD never did.
Yeah.
RTD was all like, we'll throw in a couple of homicidal Santa Claus robots and
Right.
So what we've got here now is right this Gift of the Magi thing, right? Where it's like the Doctor lied to Clara about Gallifrey being back, and she lied to him about Danny being back, and we have this whole thing. And that's what's going to play out in the Christmas special. But as far as season 9, I would like to see season 9 be what I thought season 8 was going to be. I mean, like I said, you know, the whole Moffat master plan, I felt like he went to all this trouble to get the show back to something more like it was in the classic series, and I would like to see him get on with that at this point with season 9. I think Capaldi is great. I think Capaldi is maybe a better doctor for stories that are not so much about the doctor, which is what the classic series was, right?
The
doctor was the main character, but it was not all about his soul-searching and navel-gazing and all that.
I agree with that a lot.
I don't think Capaldi's a good doctor for that. I'd like to see, you know, the kinds of stories that he's trying to tell change a little bit in the next series. And I do think, as we've said, I think I'm ready for a new companion as much as I've learned to love Clara this season. I think this doctor needs an Ace or a Leela. I think he needs someone else to kind of take him in new directions.
Well, the new series could use a companion that does not come from 20th century Earth. That would be fantastic.
That would be like a weirdly radical... It's weird how radical that idea seems.
Well, the new series wrestles with this concept where, starting with Russell T. Davies, they really want to glorify the ordinary person, starting with Rose, which is fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
Yet at the same time, they want to glorify the experiences they have with the Doctor so that those ordinary experiences are now so awful to return to them that no one wants to go back. So it seems at odds, the two ideas. One says, ordinary people are great. They can be extraordinary. But once they've been with the Doctor, everything pales in comparison. Even Clara says about Danny's death, it's mundane. Mm-hmm. It's boring. And I'd love that to be rectified somehow. Just have a companion that gets along well with the Doctor and they have some adventures.
I also think Moffat is not the writer for those characters. I think, you know, as much as I love Moffat's writing, as much as I agree with a lot of the criticisms about Russell T. Davies' writing, Russell T. Davies wrote real people in a way that I don't think Moffat does. I think Rose was a real person in a way that neither Amy nor Clara has been.
The first season Clara showed up, she wasn't really a character. She was a plot device.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way that didn't bother me so much because it kind of harkened back to this, for me, kind of harkening back to like this older Doctor Who where it was kind of more like straight pulp fiction and characters. You know, old school pulp fiction wasn't really about character as much as it was plots. It's a lot more problematical doing that in the modern day because, you know, well, this female character is just there to serve the plot. She's not actually a person, and you can't really do that anymore.
Fair enough.
But, and so I go through all this self-examination as like, you know, am I just, God, am I another one of these neck-bearded guys living in his mother's basement just like, I don't want to see any of this girl crap. You know, God, I hope I'm not that guy.
I think, Kelvin, having known you for a certain number of years, you're not that guy.
Okay. Because I have this reaction, and then I'm like, and then it kind of somewhat overlaps with the reaction of a lot of certain kinds of fans I can't stand. And
I think if you're recognizing minor elements of your personality in the exaggerated horror show of the internet, then you're having the right reaction to it. You know?
Okay.
Certainly, we've all read those reactions to the master being a woman thing on IO9 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
There was.
I actually haven't read those. Are people really having a problem with that?
Okay, so there was. I haven't gone deep down this dark hole. But there was at least one compilation of these are the worst reactions to people responding to the master being a woman now. And my favorite, of course, was somebody saying, Stephen Moffat has destroyed everything I've ever loved about Doctor Who. So the commentary was, of course, so what you loved about Doctor Who was the master's penis. okay.
It wouldn't be a Doctor Who episode if someone didn't tweet, this has destroyed everything I loved about Doctor Who. I mean, it just right. Every episode.
Clearly, back in 1963, when they reshot An Unearthly Child, somebody was there saying, you have now destroyed everything I've ever loved
that
about
That pilot
Doctor
was
Who.
Perfect.
I just wanted it to be a nice little drama about a girl in school, and then you drag this time and space crap into it. What?
So final.
I got a little off topic. Sorry.
So final thoughts about where we see season 9, the Christmas special, Peter Capaldi going.
Let me pose a question to the panel. Obviously looming large. How do you all feel about what should happen with Gallifrey?
Well, certainly that's got to be a big plot point in season 9, right? I expected it to be the big plot point in this season.
Yeah,
and that's another thing they just hung fire on and didn't address until almost literally the last minute.
Well, one thing I've been really uncomfortable with about Gallifrey in the new series is that by destroying it, they made the Doctor identify with it in a way that he never did in the original series.
Yes.
And I feel like now he's so attached to it. And the drama in that last scene where he's pounding the TARDIS console because it's not there. And I mean, yes, I realize it was a traumatic choice to destroy Gallifrey and then to save it, but he left the place because he thinks it's pretty much worthless.
Yeah, there's a weird discontinuity there in that last conversation with Clara. He's pretending that he's going to go back home.
Mm-hmm.
So he identifies with it as home, at least to the degree that Clara, who understands him pretty well.
And it was there in the day for the Doctor, or of the Doctor. That's a day for Data. Maybe I'm confusing the two.
But, yeah, you're right. What is there? What is that about Gallifrey? They've systemically not talked about anything related to the planet that he might actually care about. They don't talk about his family or his probable family in any real terms. It's not like he murdered his wife or children when he blew up the planet, and not even his friends, Leela and maybe Romana, who might be president of Gallifrey.
Yeah.
He doesn't talk about things individual. He talks about the planet as a whole, and he's never identified with Gallifrey as a whole. He's never done that in the classic series, and why would he? He ran away from it.
Yeah, so it has bothered me in the past, but at the same time, it kind of intrigues me. If dealt with in an interesting way, I think bringing Gallifrey back could be really compelling, because they would be forced kind of to go back to that to make him go to Gallifrey and then again realize why he left it in the first place. And it could be a nice new spin for the new series to see that again.
We could finally have the best Gallifrey story since Deadly Assassin.
I would love to see a really good Gallifrey story again.
Well, I think that they have to do something with it for the next season. They hit the pause button on it for season 8, but something's going to happen to it now.
And sure really, my biggest question is Cyber Brigadier just floating around out there?
Oh, God,
which
Cyber Brigadier.
I have to say that there was a moment where I thought, you know, kind of teared up a little. Oh, because he saved his daughter. Yeah, but then I went, is he in there as tortured as Danny is? Yeah. And did he fly off? And I couldn't decide. It was both cheap and it appealed to me in its cheapness.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's
that was totally my reaction. I was like, of course, they played up the whole Brigadier thing with his daughter, and you knew she probably wasn't going to be killed. And then it's the Brigadier who actually kills the Master, finally, although she is certainly not dead in the long term. But okay, that makes thematic sense. And then he salutes him, and I'm a little sad. Oh, that's nice. And then the Cyber Brigadier shoots off into the sky, and I'm like, oh, are we going to have Cyber Brigadier adventures now?
He'll team up with Rusty, the Doctor's pet Dalek, and Handles,
and
he will have an army.
In the Australian spinoff.
Oh, and then the Doctor's clone daughter is still out there someplace.
Right, yes, which they mentioned in the last episode. Oh, my God.
So we want to see spinoffs. Lots of spinoffs.
This actually is one of my theories about what could happen, is that we get a spinoff about the Cole Hill School with Clara. That takes the place of the Sarah Jane Adventures.
Okay,
I would be okay with that.
So Cyber Brigadier, Cyber Brigadier, K-9, Handles, the Doctor's daughter,
and Ian Chesterton. We just threw in there elderly Ian Chesterton from Coal Hill.
His name is on the plaque as headmaster.
I would die happy if we could get William Russell back for like 5 minutes.
Well, you know, like, oh, here's the 95-year-old.
So that's what we want for our new companion. We bring Ian Chesterton back.
All right, and season Ace 9.
Together with Stephen the Moffat, 12th Doctor.
They fight crime.
If you're listening.
Done.
He's not listening.
All right, thank you. This has been our special Season 8 Peter Capaldi-sode. I'm Pat.
I'm Michael, the unaffiliated critic.
I'm Kelvin.
And I'm Joshua.
And we are all saying,
get off my world!
Too loud guitar.
No, I've heard exactly two comments about the podcast. I really like it. The guitar was too loud.